sounds like someone just opened the floodgates. Maybe the lake's draining away.
What's going on, Wicklow? Is it the pilgrims? What are they trying to do?
I don't know. I don't know what it is, I swear.
The demons are closing in.
JB and Ryan broke into a trot, trying to search as much ground as they could before company arrived. Jubilee kept pace, but Wicklow fell back. If Ryan and JB hadn't stopped to examine a steel hatch set in the middle of the corridor floor, they would have lost him. The hatch had a locking wheel and was marked with a stenciled sign that read, Turbine Channel Access, number 15A.
It's for service access to the dam's turbines. Water comes into the channel from the Vale side, where the reservoir used to be. It runs down, drives the turbines, and pours out the other side. That channel has to have an outlet downstream.
But we're on the intake side of the turbines. To get to the outflow passage, we're going to have to go through them. There may not be a way to do that. The blades could be frozen, the intake screened. Ryan, it could be a dead end. Or worse, that rushing noise we hear might be the channel full of water. Shit! The second demon!
We can't defend this hallway with 9 bullets between us. But if we duck down the channel, at least we can put that hatch between them and us.
JB didn't waste precious time arguing. He grabbed hold of the hatch's wheel and started turning it. When the lock released, he flopped the hatch back on its hinges. They held their torches down into the opening, half expecting to see a torrent. 25 feet below, the flat concrete floor was dry, but the sound of the water was much louder. With Jubilee following, Ryan climbed through the hatch and descended a steel access ladder that was lag-bolted to the wall. The one-eyed man stepped off the bottom of the ladder, set his torch down, and helped Jubilee to the ground. Torch in one hand, Astra 380 in the other, he scanned the dark channel. It was square, 20 by 20, and its floor was pitched. The slope steepened to the right, radically. Somewhere out of sight in that direction, it angled down to meet the turbine blades. The channel hadn't held water for a very long time. There were no puddles on the floor. Ryan couldn't only hear the water's roar, he could feel the vibration of it flowing under his feet. It was traveling away from the Vale, under the dam, and out the other side.
This can't be good.
JB had shut the hatch above them and locked it from the inside before he started down the ladder. Wicklow was already halfway down, moving carefully in his injured foot, which was bleeding again. The big man was slammed face first into the ladder. He dropped his torch. Something else fell away as well, out from under his robe, landing on the floor, and Wicklow dropped like a trap door had opened under him. He clung to the ladder with his hands, his arms fully outstretched, bearing his entire weight. One leg flailed to find the rungs. Ryan blinked. The other leg was gone at the hip. Ryan spun Jubilee out of the way.
Jump! Jump now!
JB pushed off from the ladder and fell past the mortally wounded pilgrim. An instant after he hit the floor, the blur once again passed high overhead, this time from right to left. A slurry of blood and guts splattered the walls, practically cut in two by the creature's leg horns. The demon fell on top of him at once, its sides puffing in and out. It opened its mouth impossibly wide, like it had unhinged its jaws, and leaning over his face, began to dry heave. Dry heaves that turned quickly wet. Yellow slime poured out of its throat. Wicklow frantically clawed at the air, kicking with his surviving leg. The demon bore down, puffing harder, and puked buckets. Wicklow went rigid, his back arching up from the floor. His face and beard covered in digestive slime. He blew yellow bubbles. Ryan and JV took aim at the creature's back, but neither fired. They remembered how many bullets it had taken to stop the last one. Wicklow was a goner, and this demon was busy. Tucking away their blasters, they snatched up Jubilee by the armpits and carried her between them as they ran down the intake channel. The light from their torches faded to gray 30 feet ahead. Beyond that was black. The floor continued to tip until the angle was 45 degrees. If it had been wet, they couldn't have kept their footing. As it was, it felt like they were half falling into dim oblivion and never quite reaching it. Ryan had seen some bastard hard things in the hellscape, but the look in Wicklow's eyes as the thing vomited acid onto his face was something he hoped he would live long enough to forget.
Damn.
There's the turbines.
The turbine assembly completely filled the channel, blocking their passage. The steel housing was mounted to huge anchor bolts set in the floor, walls, and ceiling. In the middle of the housing, A set of fan blades, 10 feet across, was suspended on a central hub and axle. There was no screen or gate to impede the flow of water across the blades. They set Jubilee down in front of the assembly. Then, Ryan and JB poked their torches in the gaps between the fan blades. Right away, the nature of the problem was clear. The turbine had more than one set of blades, and each turned independently on the same axle. For them to crawl through the turbine, all the gaps would have to be lined up. The two men tried to turn the first fan, pulling down on the edges of the blades. It wouldn't rotate. It wouldn't even budge. After 100 years, its grease had turned solid, and its bearings were frozen. Ryan wedged the barrel of the Galil between the lowermost blade and the turbine housing, and leaned all his weight on it. It still wasn't easy to turn, but JB managed to move the blades far enough so Ryan could slip past. Between the first and second sets of blades, there was perhaps 3 feet of space. Using the Galil again, Ryan pried the second fan into position and crawled forward to the third, which left enough room for Jubilee and JB to enter behind him.
Can you move the first blade back?
JB was already doing just that. He pulled down on the fan, rotating its blades to block the demon's path. For the moment at least, they were enclosed in a steel housing.
I don't think it can get in.
We can't stay here. The longer we wait, the more of them are going to come. We gotta find the end of the channel. See if there's an opening to the outside.
Ryan started attacking the last fan blade with the assault rifle. He bent the steel stock of the weapon, but got the fan's frozen bearings to release. He crawled out the far side of the turbine and stood up. The end of the channel wasn't within the radius of his torch.
I'm gonna check it out, JB.
Here, take the Smith. It's got more wallop.
No, you keep it.
Ryan left the Galil behind as well, because he didn't want the extra weight to slow him down. With the 380 in one hand and the torch in the other, he sprinted away from the turbine. The grade continued downhill and steep. If he had something chasing him on the return trip, he was dead meat. The outflow channel went on and on. He passed more demon holes in the walls. Nothing came out after him. He kept on running until he saw another hatch set in the floor. This one didn't have a wheel on top, and there was no stenciled sign indicating its function. He tried to open it, but couldn't. It was locked from the other side. When he'd gone another 50 feet, he could see the channel's terminus ahead. It ended in a rusty red square. Not a speck of light showed through. It was like looking at the bottom of a mine shaft. Ryan raced up to the floor-to-ceiling barrier. The gate was made of heavy steel, ribbed vertically and horizontally for strength, watertight, or nearly so. Its hinges were on the other side, inaccessible. The gate was jammed closed. There was no budging the gate with any means at hand. It had to have weighed 10 tons, easy.
Fire blast!
Ryan!
Water poured between the elevator car doors, splashing over and swirling around the sprawled companions. As they pushed up from the floor, holding their weapons high to keep them dry, the elevator bobbed like a cork, tipping from side to side, and as it did so, banging into the shaft walls. Its control cables had gone slack when it hit bottom 15 feet too soon.
By the three Kennedys, we are going under!
Hit the up switch!
Mildred braced herself against the force of the incoming waterfall. As Christy was closest to the controls, she lunged for the button for floor 18. She punched it and kept on punching it.
Come on!
Brown water lapped around their knees, its level rising quickly toward the elevator's control panel. Christy continued to frantically punch the button.
It won't go! When the water hits the panel, it's going to short out!
Mildred jumped for the trapdoor in the ceiling, but she couldn't reach it.
Get the escape hatch, Doc!
Right!
As the old man pushed the trapdoor up and out of the way, the bottom of the elevator broke free of the water.
Ha-ha! By gum!
Because of all the weight sloshing around inside it, the car struggled desperately to climb. The water drained out the way it had come in, through the seam between the doors, only much more slowly. It was still emptying when the car stopped at story 18. The doors opened, and it poured out in a wave, sheeting across the floor. Drenched to the waist, the companions stepped out of the car. They wrung the water from their coattails and sleeves, and dumped quantities of it from their boots.
Well, where water from?
Like Doc said before, the White Coats diverted the water underground so they could build the redoubt in the canyon floor. At some point, the river broke free of its man-made channel and flooded the bottom story. It probably happened on Nuke Day when the dam split open.
That's certainly one explanation.
You would argue something different?
We know the demons escaped to the dam because that's where they are today. If the pilgrims' legends are true, we know when. We don't know how or why they ended up there. I think it's possible that Bob and Enid flooded the lab themselves, that they did it on purpose after their experimental subjects got loose.
They flooded the entire floor in order to drown the demons?
That would be one way to eliminate the problem without risking their own safety and the future of the redoubt and their research.
What you are proposing, dear Dr. Wyeth, could not have been a spur-of-the-moment reaction to disaster. In order for the strategy to be effective, the flooding of the floor required an enormous amount of water, transferred in a matter of a few minutes. Otherwise, the demons would have simply burrowed up through the concrete to avoid the deluge. And there's no evidence of their presence in the upper floors of this structure.
So there had to be a system in place, a failsafe built into the lab floor, a last-ditch way to terminate their hellspawn.
Only it failed.
That's true, Christy. The strategy didn't work. The demons survived the flooding of Floor 19 and ended up in the dam. The question remains, how did they get there?
Started digging here. Kept digging. Not far from dam.
That's not possible, Jack. On Enid's computer, I saw the chemistry of the enzymes the trannies produce. These creatures were built from the ground up, and they were designed to burrow through redoubt-grade concrete after it had been softened by their natural secretions. Their secretions specifically attack the binding agents in the concrete. They won't work on the bedrock around here. It's one of the default controls Bob and Enid included in their design. It effectively cages the demons, limiting their movements and operations to the assigned target areas.
So the only way the demons could have gotten to the dam is through concrete.
Or an easier way.
Which is?
A tunnel that leads out of Floor 19 and connects the redoubt with the dam.
My dear Mildred, there is no way to verify if what you are suggesting is true. And even if there were confirmation, such a tunnel is of no use to us. That floor is under 15 feet of water.
If there was a way to flood Floor 19 in order to save themselves in an emergency, there also had to be a way to empty it after the crisis had been averted. These are white coats, thorough, thoughtful people who plan ahead. The development of transgenic bioweapons was the culmination of Bob and Enid's life work. This redoubt was the key to their success. Everything they needed was here. Secrecy, isolation, technical support, bottomless funding. They would make sure they didn't have to abandon the site if something unforeseen like this happened. They would correct their mistake by chilling it, drain the floor, and start over.
We need to go back to that hydro control room. If there's a way to drain the floor, it's probably there.
When they returned to the control station, the illuminated water flow schematic made a lot more sense. They could identify the valve and T-junction symbols that directed the flow of water through various underground channels. The blue-colored lights, either on or off, indicated water's presence or absence in sections of the system. Mildred pointed at the schematic.
Water was diverted from the river down through this passage and into the lab floor. The blue lights are lit all along Floor 19, which probably indicates it's full of water. But they aren't blinking like the ones in the river.
So the trapped water remains static. There is no current moving in or out.
The lights continue on from the far end of the lab floor. They go under the vill, the fields, even under the lake. It looks like they come up inside the dam.
An underground passage. Just as Mildred hypothesized. Given its length and endpoint, I think it's safe to assume it had nothing to do with terminating the laboratory subjects.
I think it's an emergency escape tunnel for the redoubt's white coats. It's gotta be. When there was 500 feet of water overhead, the only ways in and out of Minotaur were via the MAT trans unit or in some kind of underwater wag that took people and supplies to and from the surface. If something went wrong with the transport vehicle and the MAT trans unit failed, they'd be stuck down here. Bob and Enid wouldn't leave themselves without a backup.
I think you're right. And it's easy to see how the demons got to the dam.
Pray do elaborate.
Bob and Enid tried to drown their offspring, but they didn't get all of them. Some made it out of the lab, down the emergency escape tunnel, to the dam before the tunnel was flooded.
Christy pointed at the line of unblinking lights between Floor 19 and the dam.
The water in that passage is all that's keeping the demons where they are.
Yep. And to rescue Ryan and JB, we're going to have to pull the plug on it. With those stones back in front of the redoubt's entrance, it's our only way in.
Because it follows a straight line to the dam, more or less, it appears to be a much shorter route than the roundabout path through the fields Ryan and JB were forced to take.
After a quick survey of the station's simple control panels, Mildred located the remote switches she needed. Not only did she have to open the emergency escape passage's drain valve, which was on the far side of the dam, she had to close the water intake from the river, which kept the channel perpetually topped off. When she activated the water release valve, they heard the roar of rushing water from the floor below.
How long are we going to have to wait for the water level to drop?
Better give it 10 minutes.
Maybe closer to 5.
Yeah, right.